This is What's at Risk on WBZ News Radio 1030 and WBZ.com with Mike Christian of Risk Strategies Company.
Hi, I'm Mike Christian, and welcome to a special encore presentation of What's at Risk. We're interested in what you're thinking about. Send us an email at whatsatrisk@risk-strategies.com and let us know what's on your mind. Do you ever wonder what qualities make one organization superior to another? Well, in segment one tonight, we'll get some insight on that very topic in our discussion with John G. Miller, author of Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional. In segment two, we'll help you discover your inner philosopher. One of What's at Risk's favorite guests, Andrew Pessin, is back to talk about his scintillating little book, The 60-Second Philosopher. Want to write for the 10th ranked newspaper or magazine? How about if your kids attended the third best school in town or got assigned the fourth best teacher? Would you be satisfied if your place of worship was fair to middling? Nobody aspires or desires to be mediocre. In Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional, best-selling author and organizational consultant John G. Miller shows how we can all stand out from the crowd and have an outstanding organization in every way. Outstanding. Girl, you got me up. Exciting. People are attracted to outstanding organizations. They want to buy from them, sell to them, invest in them, volunteer at them, and work for them. Outstanding helps every organization, whether a corporation, nonprofit, small business, government group, church, or charity, work to be one of those organizations. John G. Miller understands that no company or individual wants to be mediocre or just average. People and the organizations for which they work want to excel in their industry and be regarded as the best. For Miller, that means that people and organizations want to be outstanding. With this overall concept in mind, the author shares 47 proven techniques to achieve outstanding performance and results. Through his years of experience working with businesses and nonprofit organizations, the author discovered that each successful organization maintained and acted upon its crucial core values. That meant that those who were outstanding in their industries were thinking and doing the right things while not thinking or doing the wrong ideas and practices. The idea of having both personal and organizational guiding principles is simple but very powerful. Through having a purpose of being the best, everyone involved in the organization develops their passion for being outstanding. Talk about the passion. Provides the practical and hands-on tools to achieve greatness in any organization or industry. Through adoption of the book's 47 principles at the personal level, a huge difference is made in the behavior of the entire organization. John G. Miller never forgets that organizations are made up of people, and he believes people want to be the best and be part of an outstanding group of people. As a result, personal responsibility and accountability will achieve success across the entire company. John G. Miller is the founder of QBQ Inc., an organizational development company dedicated to making personal accountability a core value for organizations while enabling them to become outstanding. He has worked with hundreds of Fortune 500 and other companies as well as governmental and non-government organizations internationally. Miller appears often on national television and radio and is the author of the best-selling QBQ, The Question Behind the Question, and Flipping the Switch.
Hey, a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now.
We are speaking with John G. Miller, the author of Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional. So nobody aspires to be average, and no company aspires to be average, but in reality, only a few organizations really shine. Why do you think that is?
Well, somehow they have figured out the process for being what I call outstanding. Obviously, I didn't coin the phrase outstanding, but if you listen to people, Mike, whenever they are really excited or impressed with something, they'll say, you know, that was outstanding. So I decided to title my new book with really just that one word, outstanding, with an exclamation point. Of course, the subtitle, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional, because I always thought that people really do have a choice. They can work with certain organizations or they can go somewhere else. So whether I'm going to a restaurant, if I have, you know, bad meal and I get bad service, I can next time decide not to go there and go somewhere else. So I've made that choice. If I have five post offices in my area like I do in Colorado, I can choose the one that I think serves me best. People vote with their feet when it comes to changing churches. Corporations change suppliers. So here's the point. People actually, what I call, fire organizations. People fire organizations, and one thing we've learned is the best organizations do a better job of drawing the market to them as opposed to repelling people and repelling customers. And if I took the time to interview a lot of people and said, you know, why did you fire an organization, they'd say, fire an organization? You know what? I have done that. I stopped buying from that organization. I fired them, and I went somewhere else. So why are some better than others? Well, that's what the book's all about. 47 different things we can do to be better so that we don't get fired by the marketplace.
Now, one of those 47 is choose to change. How does an organization know when it's time to change from the status quo?
Well, that's an excellent question, because possibly we don't always know. We don't always know. So what that means is having a mindset that we're always needing to change. It's kind of like we just need to accept the fact that we need to anticipate change, because we know, you know, past few decades, we know how much change is here. We have to accept change when it comes. But more than just anticipating change and accepting the change when it comes, really the great organizations accelerate change. And what I mean by that in the book is they say, we're going to change. Even if the market possibly for a few days, weeks, or months hasn't changed, we are going to change, because we cannot let change happen to us. One thing you find down through the history of corporations is organizations that have allowed change to happen to them are the ones that have fallen by the wayside. So the best organizations have a mindset that says every day, what can I do to change? How can I adapt? What can I do to accelerate the change inside our organization so I can stay ahead of the curve and, of course, ahead of the competition?
But you really have to be paying attention all the time, right?
All the time. It's called vigilance. The best organizations are vigilant. They don't get complacent. We talk in the Outstanding book about, you know, not allowing complacency to come in. We talk about staying alarmed. I use an analogy of, you know, have you ever walked through a parking lot or a retail store and heard a car alarm going off in the past decade? You probably have, and what did you do? Nothing. We have heard so many alarms out in the parking lots, we don't even respond to them anymore. And that's what happens inside organizations. We are no longer alarmed by the things that should worry us, you know, like the competition, what they're doing, and the quality of people we have on board. So complacency starts to come into the organization, and we become dangerously satisfied with what we're doing, and we wrap that with an unawareness of the changing world. So change and defeating complacency and not stagnating, these are ideas in the book, and they're all connected, and it takes vigilance to stay on top of something like change.
What do you mean when you say purpose powers passion?
Well, that little example in the book that I give, when I was checking out at a grocery store and I had, you know, I bought 100 items and the woman says, stamps or ice? And I remember thinking, stamps or ice? Why are you asking me at the checkout if I want stamps or ice? So I decided to ask her. I said, why do you ask me if I want stamps or ice? And she leaned toward me and whispered, and she said, because if I don't ask you, I get written up by my boss. Well, that's not exactly purpose. Mm-hmm. That's doing a job because I've been told to do it, but not really knowing why I do it. So in our research, one thing we found is people that are excited to come to work, excited to stay at work all day, the ones that are passionate about the job that they're doing, they really can connect it to why the organization exists and why it does what it does. So in this chapter called Keeping the Mission Top of Mind, we actually talk about the Denver Rescue Mission, where Brad Miley, the CEO, has 160 staff, and he says, believe me, these people that come in every day with the mission of feeding 800 homeless people a day, they know exactly why they do what they do. And you might say, well, that's of course they're going to think that way and feel that way inside the Denver Rescue Mission, where the job is to feed the homeless. But you'll find in great companies, no matter what the product is, no matter what the service is, people know why they're doing the job. The purpose of knowing why they're doing what they're doing fuels their passion, so they're excited to be on the job. And, Mike, then they don't become the person on the elevator on a Monday morning complaining about the weekend being too short, waiting for hump day.
Yeah, that's most of the people on the elevator, unfortunately.
That's exactly right.
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change?
Choose to change. Many organizations have terrific ways of doing things, but outstanding organizations are willing to set aside the way we've always done things and, while keeping their end goals in mind, recognize when it's time to do things differently. They know that change will come, and it's better to initiate change from the inside than to have change thrust upon them from the outside.
I'm looking for one new value. I'm looking for one new value, but nothing comes my way.
Get actions in line with values. Espousing values like customer first, respect, and people are our greatest asset is meaningless unless our behaviors support those ideas. For example, if we embrace the word humility, then we have to avoid boasting, bragging, and topping each other in our interactions.
But nothing comes my way.
The whole revolution is about values. Values of any kind, you know? What you'll do for $10, what you'll do with $10. Really, it all comes down to values, what you value and how much. The businessmen are the ones that really, like, kind of got the country where it is in both ways, in the positive and the negative, man. They did, the businessmen, because there's no morality in business. Just the ledger. Keep it in the black. Show a profit. Keep it in the black. Keep it in the black. Never mind your soul. Never mind the landscape. Never mind the other guy. Keep it in the black. Keep it in the black. Do what you can. Keep it in the black.
Business as usual going on.
Big plywood up there.
Business as usual.
Businessman did it.
Sweet forgiveness, that's what you give to me.
Forgive mistakes. Forgiveness is essential and should be considered when someone makes an honest mistake. The founder of Papa John's, John Schnatter, had this to say: I've always found that people who struggle are hard on others, but those who do well in life are hard on themselves. People make mistakes, sometimes even more than once, so it's simply wrong to expect perfection from anyone. Miller points out that no one thrives in an organization culture that is quick to attack people when mistakes are made. And then my favorite, listen in all directions. There are three ways to listen in an organization: management listening to the people listening to each other, and everyone in the organization listening to the customer. Multitasking is the enemy of good listening. It's critical that we look each other in the eye with undivided attention, saying, in effect, you are the most important person in my world at this moment, and I want to hear every word you have to say.
Listen, listen.
We're speaking with John G. Miller, author of Outstanding.
Another one of the ways to make your organization outstanding is to listen in all directions. You know, with sensory input on overload today with Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and Blackberries, how do we get back in the moment and really listen?
Isn't that funny how things like that take old-fashioned personal discipline. It's kind of like losing weight. You know, it's just a choice. I've got to decide today I'm going to eat a little less than I burn off. Well, that's just personal discipline. And, of course, in this country, we're into fads, so we're always looking for the quick fix and the quick solution. But in reality, we need to return to old-fashioned discipline. You know, eat a little less than I burn off. Well, it's the same thing with all our toys. With Twitter and Facebook and portable laptops, I've got a wireless laptop that weighs 2.7 pounds, Mike. I take it everywhere I go. And, of course, BlackBerries and PDAs. Sometimes, you know what you have to do and I have to do is just set it aside, shut it down, and look at people. I've been married 30 years. I need to look at my wife and say, let's chat. I've got 7 children. When those kids come to me, one of the hardest things to do when I'm on the laptop is to close that laptop, look them dead in the eye. But that takes old-fashioned discipline. It can be done, and we can really get past some of these toys we've become so addicted to and get back to listening. And, of course, in the Outstanding book, we talk about managers listening to the people. We talk about colleagues listening to each other. And we talk about all of us listening to the external customer, the paying customer. Good stuff.
The irony of all that is that all these toys, as you call them, are communication devices. Yeah, yes. We don't communicate as well as we did before.
Well, a lot of studies, I guess, have shown that the more we get on laptops and Facebook and Twitter, the more disconnected we are from the real world and from people. We think we're connecting. We're really not, because we're not looking people in the eyes.
What differentiates leaders in exceptional organizations from those in mediocre organizations?
Well, even in this book, we do kind of fight the concept of leadership, and here's why. My background is I've sold training since 1986 to corporations, and Mike, if you could see all the days, weeks, and months that teams have wasted arguing about how important leadership is. Everybody wants to be a leader, and nobody ever wants to raise their hand and say, you know what, I'd like to just be a good people manager. Everybody says leadership, leadership, leadership. Well, the reason I mention that is when we've done studies of people who say, my boss is a great leader, and we say to them, well, what do they do to be a great leader? The employee will say, well, she coaches me, he talks to me, he follows up with me, she trains me, he asks me for my opinion and listens to my answers, he helps me understand what to do on my job. So when you break it down, people who are labeled great leaders inside an organization are often great people managers. So when your listeners talk about leadership, I'm hoping they're also thinking about management of people. Because when people leave an organization, the number one reason they leave, studies have shown for decades, is not pay, not work environment, it's the manager. So the better the manager is at managing people, the better leader they will be.
And how do you differentiate between leadership and management?
Well, I really don't. See, in my research of the 25 years I've been calling on corporations and listening to all these people, I have found that the people who are good leaders are also good managers, and thus the people who are good people managers are good leaders. So you have to get into, you know, the arguing of the definition of leadership. As you probably know, a lot of people say, you know, leadership's having a vision and all these kinds of things. And I guess that's important. But I do know that when I'm managed by somebody, I want that person to be a skillful people manager. And when they are, I will say, boy, my boss is a really great leader.
You write about forgiving mistakes and seeking no culprits. It doesn't seem like we're very forgiving anymore in our society. To me, there's almost a certain meanness, especially in the press. How do we get past that and really get back to forgiving mistakes?
Well, of course, that would be a value that individuals need to hold dear. The story in the book there that you're referring to is about a time I backed into another guy's truck, and when I jumped out and saw that he had biceps 3 times the size of mine, tattoos, a bald head, was 6 inches taller, and had a T-shirt on that was 2 sizes too short, I was worried. And we got chatting, and he looked at my damage, and he looked at his damage, and he surprised me, and he said, you know what, you took it worse than I did, and I've hit people. Let's forget it. And he smiled and drove away. I was stunned. He actually just forgave me for a human error. And on the job, inside organizations, between colleagues, between departments, what we find is a lack of forgiveness. People get frustrated. They have personal agendas. They're trying to get things achieved and accomplished. They've got bosses breathing down their necks. And somebody else drops a ball. Somebody else makes a mistake. In the unhealthy organization, Mike, we end up with passive-aggressive behavior. We end up with grudge holding. But in the outstanding organization, people say, kind of like that other truck driver did to me when I hit his truck, he said, you know, there but for the grace of God go I, which means I could have made that mistake. Inside healthy organizations, you find no blame, no finger pointing, no grudge holding, just people saying, what can I do to support the other department? And they forgive other people's mistakes because they say there's too much to do. Let's move on.
For what types of organizations is your book most useful?
Well, it's only been out a couple of weeks, and we're finding a gamut, a wide variety. Corporations have been my natural market, but this book is also written for church pastors. A lot of pastors are saying, let's pull my team together in these larger churches and study the outstanding book, because we need to bring these kinds of ideas in. Government, nonprofit, it really doesn't matter the group as long as that group is an organization. And I think it's really a good study book for teams, Mike. If you can picture a team of 6 or 8 or 12 people, you know, sitting around that conference table, reading the book together, discussing it chapter by chapter, and deciding, okay, see, there's 47 things. That's a lot. So you have to say, okay, where are we strong and where are we weak? And as they look at the things where they're weaker and not as productive and not as healthy, they can say, okay, let's work on chapter 30. Let's work on number 12. Let's work on number 44. And that's how teams bring this material into an organization. But it really is for any organization, as long as they are a collection of people with a common goal.
Did you learn these 47 things as you've worked with companies down through the years?
You know, I've thought about, where did I learn all this? Well, there's 4 roles I've played in life. Number 1, I'm a business owner myself. Number 2, I'm a customer consumer just like you, Mike, and I get frustrated when I get bad service. Number 3, I've been an outside vendor salesperson since 86, calling on organizations. And I discovered as an outsider selling to organizations, some made quick, good, healthy decisions and moved fast, and others, you know what, formed committees to form committees and held meetings to hold meetings. And then also, that last role I play is as a consultant. When I get inside an organization, that's when I witness a lot of things. And I see organizations not train their managers, not train people, speak in code, not coach people in the moment. So there's material in this book that comes from all 4 different roles I've played over the past couple decades in my life.
Tell us about your organization, QBQ.
Well, QBQ is an acronym that stands for the question behind the question, and that's the title of my first book, which I'm happy to say reached bestseller status. It's all about personal accountability, and come on, could we not use some more personal responsibility in this country? What do you think?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. So QBQ, the book, is all about getting rid of blame, finger-pointing, procrastination. Then we came out with Flipping the Switch, which is the next personal accountability book, Flipping the Switch. And now we've moved towards organizational development with the Outstanding book. We're a small organization. We have a network of distributors across the country. And the primary thing I do is I go out and speak. In fact, even as we talk today, I'm heading out to Alabama and Georgia to do some speaking this week on Outstanding.
John, anything else you want to add?
Well, other than people can reach us through OutstandingOrganization.com. It's long but simple, OutstandingOrganization.com. And if somebody emails me from your listener base, I will respond. I love to talk to customers.
We've been speaking with John Miller, the author of Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional. John, thanks a lot.
To clear the road to you.
Of What's at Risk, go to WBZ.com/risk.
Take care of the road you choose.
Time for a CBS News update. We'll be right back with more What's at Risk.